All right! And discussions of truth. This is the fourth installment on this day, March 25th, Wednesday, coming at you 7:13 p.m. Eastern Standard. We got the Lindstroth Report coming our way here. J.P. Lindstroth joining us here momentarily. We just finished with Makia Freeman. Wow. Catch that episode. It will blow your mind. Again, hashtag Stop Mass Media. Yes, we refrain from incorporating, allowing mainstream media from brainwashing us. All right, like I said, this is the fourth hour. We started off today from the UK with Tobias Churton. He's an Oxford-educated scholar that's dived extensively into the life of Aleister Crowley. Gnosticism, magic, if you will, persecuted by Christians. Okay, why? He was nonviolent. He didn't invoke violence. Why was he hated? Okay, yet, interestingly enough, loved by people like the Beatles, Mick Jagger, Led Zeppelin. So what was it about what he studied and researched that provoked, in a way, such great music? Because, I mean, the Beatles, dude, they're awesome, right? I mean, I think so. Led Zeppelin, all the Mick Jagger, these are great musicians. These are great. These are great contributions to the music industry and society overall as a whole. John Lennon. So anyway, so that's how we started the hour. We started early at 4 p.m. to incorporate that that quadruple header, and of course to bring him in at a reasonable time from the UK. Then A. Ralph Epperson joined us, and check out his book, The New World Order. Look, he's an American historian that's been researching what really is the deep state for about 50 years. 50 years. I mean, that's older than that's older than I am. How old are you? 50 years, that's quite a contribution. So unfortunately, in that era, we did have a number of technical issues. Again, we are out of studio. We have been broadcasting out of studio now for a number of months. So these things do occur. Fingers crossed here for this hour for the Lindstroth Report. Let me mention, however, briefly, coming your way, because the slate is extensive, folks. Here on Discuss Your Truth, even W. Gifford Jones, Harvard-educated Canadian doctor, he's 96 years old. And he said, look, vitamin C taken intravenously will kill any virus. That's a 96-year-old doctor, human being, Harvard-educated, who said that on this program 2 weeks ago. And he said, yes, it will kill the coronavirus. So up your VC intake, folks. Last week, we were joined by Anastasia Nesvitalova and Ronan Palin. They both teach at City University of London. And they talk about their book, The Hidden Nature of Finance, Sabotage. On slate here, coming up next week, and this will be tremendous here, Zach Voorhees will be joining us. I'm not sure if Miriam will be with him or not. That's Miriam Hennem, who's been on the program now, I believe, four times. The two of them do work very closely together. He's a former Google software engineer, whistleblower, and patent holder, turned over a 950-page cache to the Department of Justice Antitrust Division in August 2019. Quickly. The reason why I collected these documents was because I saw something dark and nefarious going on with the company Google. By the way, just a little information about me historically. I actually lived in Mountain View, and I've mentioned this on the program before. I was actually in Palo Alto, and I think it was 2000 when Charles Schwab, as a matter of fact, Stanford grad, came walking out of the restaurant, and he came out with probably four other men, and he says, I'm going to start investing in a new search engine. It's called Google. Literally, that's the first time I ever heard that name. And I thought to myself, a new search engine? What's wrong with Alta Vista? What's wrong with Ask Jeeves? What's wrong with Netscape? What's wrong with Yahoo? And lo and behold, Google has, again, now it's pushing on the doors of antitrust conversations. Okay, so anyway, to continue the quote, I felt that our entire election system was going to be compromised forever by this company that told the American public that it was going that it was not going to do any evil. They were intending to sculpt the information landscape so that they could create their own version of what was objectively true. All right, that's coming up next week, and we're going to follow that in 2 weeks with Dr. Bandy Lee, who will be rejoining us. Fortunately, very glad to have her rejoin the program. We should be discussing the dangerous case of Donald Trump. That is 37 psychiatrists and mental health experts assessing a president and his mental state. And we'll be following that up. In fact, April 8th at the 6 o'clock hour, doubleheader scheduled, W. Craig Bill Reed. He's spent the last 10 years researching Vladimir Putin, including his early life and KGB exploits. So we'll be talking about spies of the deep. Mid-April, Discussions of Truth will be hosting Gerald Leo Posner. He has 3 New York Times best-selling books to his name. He's a former Wall Street lawyer based in Miami. So that's the quick slate coming up here in April, not to mention a couple others. Donate to the program. You can do it at discussionoftruth.com. Go to my website, iantrottier.com. Find all my past episodes there. Freedom Reserved, No More Lies is coming your way. It's a 365-page basic writing of the first year or so of what I learned from this program. Okay, No More Lies sums it up. Read it. You're going to want to publish by Trine Day, coming your way. Again, coming your way by Trine Day and pre-ordered right now at Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com. Okay. So, let me also mention Stop Mass Media shirts are available at StopMassMedia.com. And follow me on Twitter and Instagram, both handles, INTROTTIER. Let's bring on JP for a Lindstroth Report, the coronavirus. Okay, if you want an alternative view on what's happening really economically with the coronavirus, yes, I said economically, definitely listen to this episode and definitely check out The Last Hour with Makia Freeman. Here we go, JP Lindstroth.
Hello?
Mr. JP Lindstroth, welcome back to Discussions of Truth, sir.
Hey, Ian, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. This is actually, I'm not sure if I mentioned this to you or not, but this is actually a quadruple header. We started the program with, it's the first time, JP. We've done double headers and recently started a triple. 2020 has been a whole new avenue here for discussions of truth. We've demands coming in and now we're adding hours. So, yes, first quadruple awesome. Header.
That's great. Awesome.
Thank you, JP. So anyway, what's the status here for you in Florida regarding the coronavirus? You're healthy, obviously. It sounds that way. Are you quarantined?
Yeah, I mean, I had a cold like about, I don't know, a month or 6 weeks ago. And at that time, nobody was testing, so I don't even know if I had a version of it. But I mean, you know, I mean, I guess worrying things are things like that Palm Beach County's the least tested county per capita of the state.
Okay.
And I don't know. I mean, I worry like when Trump makes pronouncements that everything will be open for business and by Easter.
I mean, we laugh at it. I mean, this is serious business, but it's like the guy directing the country, and again, I try not to take sides politically, but the guy directing the country is just like not taking this serious.
Well, you know, I mean, Andrew Cuomo sounds more like the president than the president. He's the governor of New York. And I just think it's just, I think it's wrong, and I think it's irresponsible of Trump to set a date like that, especially because I taught epidemiology or co-taught a course 20 years ago, and knowing how a disease like this behaves, or any disease really, when you have an epidemic and even a pandemic like it is, that, for example, like with the Spanish flu in 1918, San Francisco was like the first city to quarantine itself and practice social distancing. And then they thought by the fall of 1918, everything was fine, and they went back to normal. And guess what? They get a huge spike of contagion and a huge spike of a death rate there, which lasted a year about.
Wow.
And Hong Kong is going through the same thing just recently. I mean, they thought they had contained everything and things could go back to normal, and then they got another wave of it, or a couple waves.
Incredible. I had not heard this.
Yeah. So when we're talking about epidemiology, we're not even talking – it's only been like, it's been a couple weeks, Ian, and –
yeah.
And I think Cuomo's right. I mean, listening to the, people who are medical doctors and epidemiologists, that probably New York will be the norm for everybody. Now, if Trump has his way and loosens restrictions on opening everything up, it could get into the millions again. I mean, that's how scary it is.
That's mind-boggling, JP. And I have that same concern in that he's going to rush to try to save the economy, and then things are just going to spiral out of control.
Right. I mean, I think you and I did an email exchange, and you were like, has this ever happened before? And I pointed to the Spanish flu of 1918, which is over 100 years ago. So it's not really in our living memory, but it certainly was in my grandparents. And, unfortunately they passed away, but I could have asked them about it. But, a lot of people after that happened forgot about it. Because World War One was going on at the time, and people were focused on the war, and also the president, Woodrow Wilson, was focusing on the war and the war effort. But more people died with the Spanish flu of 1918 than all the wars of the 20th century combined the United States fought.
Wow.
So 675,000 people estimated died. 25 million Americans were infected, estimations. 50 million people, Ian, probably worldwide died because of that flu. And that was 3% of the world population at the time.
Wow.
So we're talking about like this disease, and the reason why people tend to forget about it after it happened was they didn't like the way they behaved. Like, they shuttered people up. They ignored their neighbors. I mean, a disease like that, you become afraid. And we haven't reached that point yet here, but I'm afraid, really, Ian, if Trump opens everything up for business by Easter, and then we think we're going back to normal, and then the disease spikes.
Yeah.
Because we're not practicing social distancing. All you have to do is simple math and realize you can get into the millions pretty quickly.
It's almost, JP, it's almost a catch-22, right? I mean, last time you joined the program, it's a couple of weeks ago, and the coronavirus is of concern for most people. So that episode seems to have done very well post-broadcast and podcast platform. But even back then, you were saying, JP, and you may have started saying that beforehand, you were one of the first that I believe I remember hearing saying, hey, look, the economic impact of this is likely, very possibly, going to outreach and far reach the health impact. So it's almost a catch-22 in that you've got a sector of the society led by, let's say, Donald Trump, to say he represents this sector, which I don't think he does. But let's say, everybody wants a healthy economy, and everybody wants to rebound from what is definitely going to be a recession. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. Let's hope it's not a depression, but you've got to catch 22, because now you're saying, okay, so Trump hurries that case up, and then he reopens the doors and the trading, but then boom, you've got a spike in cases, and then you have to close things back up and wait even longer.
I mean, you know, I hope you're well too, by the way, and your family as well. You know, I think if most Americans, and just talking about the United States, or actually just people in the world in general, if they had a choice over their health, you know, or their own mortality and economics, I think wouldn't most people choose their health and the health of their family? I think they would. I mean, the thing is, like, you know, okay, so the Congress, I mean, Senate just approved today and hasn't really been passed yet as legislation or as a bill or it become law yet. But $2 trillion package.
Yeah.
That really we know, I mean, you and I know, I mean, we all know it's going to be a drop in the bucket compared to what has been lost. But honestly, like, social distancing does work. And honestly, like, if we think it's going to be like a hurricane or like a storm and it's going to be over in this short-term view,
yeah,
boy, that's a mistake, you know, and that's what I'm afraid of. I mean, we really have to think about this long-term. And I think, you know, to the people who listen to your show and the people who have, you know, picked up on some of this, I just think, like, caution is the better form of reason, especially, like, listening to science rather than politicians. I mean, and I think a lot of people are willing to do that. I mean, Anthony Fauci, Dr. Anthony Fauci, he went to my alma mater, Holy Cross.
Where's that?
He won the Medal of Freedom. It's in Massachusetts, in Worcester, Mass.
Okay.
It's a small liberal arts college, Catholic college.
But JP, you're Massachusetts born, or you just went to school there?
I just went to school there.
Okay, it's not my business. I'm just asking questions.
No, I went to I did my undergraduate degree there in political science and Spanish, and then went on later on to do a master's at Florida State in anthropology, and then, as you know, do a PhD in anthropology at Oxford.
Right. Okay, so anyway, so Fauci is an alumni of the same institution.
Correct. Yeah. And I mean, you know, and actually think he's very believable. And I mean, he's very believable. He's an expert, you know?
Yeah, of course.
He's an expert in this stuff. I mean, you know, he's been very gentle in the way he contradicts Trump, but he has contradicted him because he needs to as a scientist, because, you know, he knows the difference. He knows what diseases can do. And if you look at, I mean, the scary thing is, Ian, is that we're probably a year, maybe a year and a half away from a vaccine. And I know a lot of people are working on this.
Yeah.
But we're a little ways away from a vaccine. And, you know, every disease is unique. I mean, just look at a disease like the Hantavirus, which affected mainly Navajo people out west. People are totally baffled how to treat it. They would, you know, with the Spanish flu, just like the Hantavirus, just like the this disease with the coronavirus and the COVID-19, people have the complicating symptoms are pneumonia, and you drown in your own fluids. The difference in the Hantavirus is that it's been passed on through deer mice, and the reason how they get rid of it is through excrement and through urine. And you get it on your clothes, and it's deadly, and it's like a spore that gets into your lung and just goes from there. Going back to the Spanish flu, the majority of people that were affected from that were 20 people from 20 to 40-year-olds.
Interesting.
Which was interesting, too, and what scientists now think, the reason why that is, that the older generation were more immune to that type of flu because they had been through some kind of other virus beforehand. So we never know how diseases are going to, you know, not behave, but like how it's going to work out. We still don't know how it's going to peak in the U.S. But I think if we're not taking precautions, Ian, then I think, and I'm sure you agree, that we're going to be in trouble, you know?
Yeah, and the other issue is it a blessing in disguise, if you will, at the cost of those certainly who have passed away from it and will pass away from it. But is it a blessing in disguise? Because look, the United States and its medical institutions are ill prepared for this. It seems to be that way anyway.
Totally. Yeah. Well, one of the things was that, President Trump cut out a lot of the medical funding a couple of years ago with that Obama and his predecessors put in place. That's one thing. The other thing is we don't have a national healthcare system.
Right, yeah.
So that's another thing is that why don't we consider that? I mean, we're the only developed country in the world that doesn't have a national healthcare system yet.
It's disgusting.
Why? It's crazy. It's crazy. Crazy. You don't hear private healthcare pitching in on this, by the way, either. And this is a point that Yanis Varoufakis brought up, who's a famous Greek economist. And one of the things that this is an article that may come out this week or not, I'm not sure. But anyway, I quote Yanis Varoufakis because of the economic implications. You're just bringing up the economic implications. And one of the things that he says is that really the 2008 crisis, economic crisis, hasn't really ended. And so what the coronavirus COVID-19 shows or demonstrates that we're in a continuation of the 2008 economic crisis. And we were just sitting on kind of a bubble, and this has kind of pricked that bubble kind of false hopes. And he said also that not only are we not out of it, but it's the coronavirus will probably make things worse that we haven't yet recovered from, 2008. And so one of the do you mind if I talk about this a little bit?
I, not at all.
Okay. So one of the things he brought up, Ian, was that the Federal Reserve back in 2009, did a magnificent job of using dollar swap lines, they're called, to infuse dollars into central banks, like to the European Central Bank and the one in Japan. But, we have Donald Trump in the White House, and the question is whether or not Donald Trump will allow the Fed, the Federal Reserve, to use dollar swap lines again to infuse dollars into the system to make more of a global recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just gonna quote from Varoufakis, because it's not my words, but I just want to quote what he says. He said, this is referring to Donald Trump, if he's not interested in doing that, the repercussions will be very simple. We are going to have an even deeper crisis, a deeper recession with tangible effects on the lives of people from Hong Kong and Shanghai all the way to Finland, Portugal, Iceland, and everywhere. This is why this epidemic is of great significance to real people's lives across the world. And this is Yanis Varoufakis, who is a famous Greek economist. I really like him, actually. But, so we have this $2 trillion package. People like Pelosi and others and McConnell, I think, know that they're going to have to pass other economic packages for our economy to survive, right? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. How long can businesses go closed?
Sure.
Having arbitrary date, like, oh, let's just open everything up on Easter because it seems like a really good date and people can go back to church. Yeah, that's great. Okay, we all, that'd be great to go back to church, but like, at the expense of what? I mean, of your grandparents? Of whom?
Yeah.
Just worrisome, basically.
Well, JP, what are your thoughts on what this could possibly do? Let's look at a an extreme scenario here. Let's say that the nobody knows what the future of this coronavirus is going to do. What we know is that the major economic engines in New York and California are totally shut down. I thought I read something like 40% of the American workforce right now is not working. That was that's a few days old. That number may be totally different now. Things change drastically day to day. But if we look at the economy, basically, the global economy has been ground to a halt because so much of it is supported by what goes on in California on a day to day basis, what goes on in New York on a day to day basis. You take that. Let's look at an extreme and say, hey, the U.S. dollar's going to plummet. It's going to get destroyed. What could that possibly do to cryptocurrencies?
Well, I don't know about cryptocurrency, and I'm not up on that. But what I do know is that let's create a doom and gloom scenario. It's like Apocalypse Now kind of thing, right? So let's say that Donald Trump gets his way, and we go back to things as normal on Easter.
Yeah.
And then the disease starts spiking again, and we get into a death spiral, and then millions of people are infected. So then you're in a worse situation where, and by the way, thank goodness for our people who work in the healthcare industries and people who work on
on
the front lines, and the firemen and the policemen, all the people that go out of their way to help out. Right? So I want to put that out there. But anyway, go to the worst situation. What's going to happen to the economy if we pretend we're going back to normal and it gets worse? So that's one doom and gloom. So, you know, you think you're going to go back to normal and then everything's worse, and then people are even more scared. But, I mean, one of the things that Varoufakis is saying is that, you know, there are measures in place, that the federal government can do, like exchange, you know, do these dollar swaps with central banks that would help. But would Donald Trump's ego like allow for that? Like number one. The thing like looking at this too, Ian, is that 78% of Americans, okay, 80% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. And that's from Forbes magazine, Ian.
Yeah.
And that's a 2017 study.
So, I mean, a
lot of people that are going to get the $1,200 plus the $500 for each kid, I mean, we'll be able to use that money. It'll be good, but it's only a stopgap. It's like a Band-Aid, right? I mean,
oh yeah.
Look at all the people with gig jobs, you know, the gig jobs are Ubering.
Yeah.
And things like that. I mean, the people who are forced to work no matter what, you know, what happens to them? And so our system is not okay. So all the states are not overwhelmed yet, but New York is certainly overwhelmed, right? Like New York does not have enough respirators at the moment. It doesn't have enough hospital beds. And I hear Cuomo almost every day, like pleading, like, what is the federal government doing? Why aren't we doing this? Take care of us first, because we're the epicenter, you know? And then once our peaks have dropped, then we'll send our medical staff to other states, you know? Makes sense. But, you know, Florida, I mean, after everything closed in New York, people started coming to Florida. So we're at 1,700 right now in Florida, people who are infected.
Okay.
That can peak, I think, any day. I don't think even we're at a realistic number, because most people haven't been tested and there aren't enough tests. I mean, I was in contact with one of my friends in Ohio, and, you know, he's a physical therapist, and one of his patients had it, but they won't test him because he doesn't have symptoms.
Uh-huh.
Because there's not enough tests, you know?
Right.
So I think the number's low. And I think China is also underreported too, Ian.
I'd agree.
So Italy's passed China in deaths, and so has Spain. But I think, China's underreported. And I think Hong Kong is really telling too, because Hong Kong thought they were over it. They contained it. And then they began having peaks again because they went back to normal. That's like canary in the coal mine. I think also New York is a canary in the coal mine. I mean, I don't know what you think, but I mean, it's crazy. It's really, it's a crazy time, Ian. It really is. I mean,
yeah, no, the reason I bring up the dollar being plummeted, the other thing is Amazon facility workers are now being diagnosed with positive with coronavirus. But you know, if for those listeners that are quarantined wherever they may be, because I know the UK now has stay at home quarantining, but in the US or anywhere, you take the reason I bring up cryptocurrency is because you take a paper form of money, a dollar bill as it be it, and you pay for your groceries during the time that you're allotted to leave your house and go buy groceries. Who knows where that money's been, and the money that's given back to you, who knows where that's been, and does it have the virus on it? So you know, is this a possibility for digital currencies to take off?
Right, gotcha.
But so I want to address for listeners, JP contributes regularly to Counterpunch. That's counterpunch.org. And I want to address a quote that you've abstracted from a book called Pathologies of Power, Health, Human Rights, and the New War on the Poor. This is 2003 in page 6. Paul Farmer argues the most basic right, the right to survive, is trampled in an age of great affluence. And that matter should be considered the most pressing one of our times. The drama, the tragedy of the destitute sick concerns not only physicians and scholars who work among poor, but all who profess even a passing interest in human rights. It's not much of a stretch to argue that anyone who wishes to be considered humane has ample cause to consider what it means to be sick and poor in the era of globalization and scientific advancement. So we've got a global pandemic. I don't think there's a single, there's not even a single country out there, that seems to be coping. I mean, China, the reports fluctuate that it's got it under control. It seems like it's completely terrorized Italy. This is something that's come out of, left field in a sense, and nobody's prepared for this. And certainly, like you're saying, the people that depend paycheck to paycheck have no savings, can't afford an expected bill of even $400. This, you know, you talk about dichotomy of the middle class shrinking. This is going to completely, this could possibly totally obliterate the middle class.
Yeah, I mean, this is the tipping point, Ian. I mean, it really is. You know, Albert Camus, I'm rereading the novel The Plague, and it was actually a book that I assigned reading when I taught this epidemiology course, and that he has a wonderful quote about, like, disease, and he says, everybody knows that pestilences have a way of recurring in the world, yet somehow we find it hard to believe in ones that crash down on our heads from a blue sky. There have been as many plagues as wars in history, yet always plagues and wars take people equally by surprise.
Interesting.
And, you know, and Camus's right. I mean, gosh, I mean, nobody expected this. Nobody predicted this, Ian. It's almost like a nuclear war. Like, the bombs are going off. What do we do? How do we deal with this? Do we have enough resources to deal with it? I mean, it's really craziness. And yes, I mean, Italy's been totally terrorized. But what was interesting when I heard, I know some Italians as well, and listening to them, one of the a woman here is an anthropologist. She texted a message on Facebook, and she basically said that when people started talking about this outbreak, people took it like they were on vacation.
Right, right.
And so they all started socializing. It was like, no big deal. Who cares? And look at them now, Ian. Okay, you know, the death tolls surpassed China from what China's reported. And I say from what they reported because I think they're underreporting. But it's spiking up and down. I mean, I think the other day, like yesterday, it was like 500 more deaths, you know, and 600 deaths, and then it's awful. You know, it's horrific. And what I'm missing from a commander-in-chief, from our president, is like a Franklin Delano Roosevelt kind of fireside chat, right? You know, Roosevelt, like, he came to power in 1932, 32nd president. And, of course, Herbert Hoover had been president, became president in 1928, and, you know, we had the Wall Street crash 1929. And it was Roosevelt who gave America the confidence again. He said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. I mean, just need somebody like,
yeah,
we're going to get through this, but, you know, we have to listen to science now. I mean, we have to listen to what the experts say. And he has the experts in.
He's not listening, you know, to them.
Listen to him, and there's in the economic experts. We have those two, Ian. We can get out of this, you know. You know, we have the ability to get out of it economically as well. The question will be: will he let the Federal Reserve stabilize the global economy?
Right, right.
Will people who are gig workers, you know, will people who are living paycheck to paycheck, 80% of us,
right?
Will we be able to get through to, I don't know how long it's going to last. Could be till the fall. That's scary, right? That's scary for everybody. Can I pay my rent? Can I pay my bills? Are we going to get through this? But I think if you're creating a false sense of this is short term, we'll get through it, like, and you create an arbitrary date like Easter when we haven't even seen this peak yet. We see New York peak. Or peaking, we haven't even seen. I mean, we don't know.
Sure.
When it's going to. Unfortunately, you don't know until after the disease is over, right? After the pandemic has spread and peaked and gone, that's when you know what the morbidity rates are, and that's when you know more than the mortality rates are. It's in hindsight, but it's not when they're happening. But let's say New York becomes Florida, and Florida and California, and then we have three epicenters. Really, you know, crazy. Maybe Washington as well, Washington State.
Right. I
mean, you know, and the scenario that I put forth that Trump allows businesses to be open and everything, people go back to seemingly normal. Or the scenario where we can isolate a few people who have it and keep isolating them, and that's not the way diseases work. And shame on those people who say things like that, because honestly, like, if you look at the simple math, and I was looking at, there's a philosopher at New York University who put up a mathematical diagram between social distancing and not social distancing.
Right.
And it was like the difference was in the millions. I mean,
wow.
Like the n-tenth of whatever. And that was on Counterpunch. He put that on Counterpunch. And I was just like, wow. I mean, and it's just, it's not that complicated math either. I mean, it's just, to the nth degree, you know, you contaminate one person to another, and because it's airborne, it makes it even that more difficult. But if we look at the history of disease, Ian, like, and just, I mean, okay, if we take the fact that probably came from animals, right?
Right.
I mean, okay, so likely sources, pangolins and bats. Well, how did that happen? Well, in the Wuhan market, they're stacking animals on one on top of each other, and they're totally stressed out.
Yeah.
And of course they're going to get sick, right?
Right.
But if you look at the history of domestication, which is in the past 10,000 years, that's where most of our diseases come from, animals that we've domesticated, whether they're pigs or the goats or the sheep or whatever, right? And that's when the Europeans, you know, the book Guns, Germs, and Seal by Jared Diamond talks about, you know, when the Europeans invaded the Americas or the conquista, right?
Right, right.
They had no immunity to those diseases that the Europeans had been living with for centuries and thousands of years because they hadn't domesticated the same animals, right?
Interesting.
They had no immunity for that, Ian.
Interesting.
And that's why even I want to bring that up too, because there are some uncontacted peoples in the Amazon who are very susceptible to this type of airborne disease. And there's missionaries now talking about going to contact them. And it's had all these anthropologists up in arms like, wait a minute. They can't do that. It would cause another genocide, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, so that's another point.
Well, there's some great points there, JP. Some great points. I mean, what I want to stress for listeners is I see, I see these different. It's wild what people are doing in their spare time, But I think there's an opportunity for listeners who are quarantined. I think there's an opportunity for them to do some work, to do some reading, to do some research, to look into some of these issues that you're raising. You know, the school's closed. Well, make the most. You've got the internet, so make the most of your time rather than just blowing it off and not doing anything productive.
No, right. I mean, I'm working on the book. I'm finding that very helpful time to introspection is a great thing. You know, I like having the time to be able to work on a book. I think people should be thanking their teachers. Now they know how difficult it is. So now you have kids at home.
Right.
So you have to, why not teach them how to cook or do some things around the house or, And of course it's like devastating for seniors in high school. I have two nieces who are seniors in high school, Ian, and they're fraternal twins, which means they're non-identical, and they're seniors in high school, poor things, and I don't know, are they going to have a graduation this year?
Right.
That's the same thing for universities. I mean, we postponed the Olympics, and just life isn't normal now, okay? So we're getting used to a new normal, at least for a while, but we can't put an end to it before it's over. That's the thing that I worry about, And unfortunately, we have to postpone some things, but, just take a deep breath.
Sure.
Introspection, some reading is not so bad. And like you were just saying, like do some things you might normally not have time to do. I don't know.
Yeah, we hope that this doesn't spiral out of control, but I think either way, we're looking at some major adjustments to the way we live life, and certainly some major re-engineering of how globally this happens, and then B, the response to it. So how do we as a race and the different organizations that control the various outlets of medical care throughout the globe respond to this type of thing, because let's hope best case scenario we get a hold of this thing and people stop getting infected and people stop dying. Let's hope it doesn't spiral out of control. But either way, there's lessons to be learned from this as we live and face the next epidemic. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, JP, right? That Zika hit hit South Florida, and then H1N1, the swine flu.
SARS emerged, right? Yeah, that's right.
So,
and I think you're right. I mean, look. I mean, be thankful, be grateful for what you have. I mean, gosh. I mean, maybe socialism's not such a bad thing. We're talking about social democracy here. We're not talking about socialism, and then people are afraid of it, but like this package that's being put through Congress is necessary. That's socialist, but it's not like socialist like communist. People get the wrong idea about things. Be thankful that we have a great healthcare providers here, people that doctors and nurses that are willing to sacrifice, but be good to them too, because you don't want to overwhelm the system. Listen to the science.
Right.
And some of the Buddhism is pretty good too. Like, listen, like calm down, take a deep breath and listen and be mindful of who you are and what you're doing. And, all these young kids, like they're thinking like they're not susceptible. It's just totally not true. I mean, there've been plenty of young people have been affected, even when young people have died, unfortunately, which I don't want anybody to die from any disease like this ever or anything like that. I think one of the takeaways obviously is how much how many things we can be thankful for. Look how delicate the economy really is. Look how interdependent sure. we are.
That's
as
right.
Not only a society, but as a world, as a globe. Really are. We're a globalized world today. And look what transnationalism can do in just a very short while. Within a month, Ian. Wow. Look at the craziness.
Yeah. 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 This is a special episode with JP because look, we're living in special times. The coronavirus is you know what, the world population is 7 billion estimated, somewhere around there. I would think that the majority of that population now has heard the news of the coronavirus. JP, thanks for joining the program, and please keep up the great work as we confide and know that you do. Give listeners a little look about what we can expect from you in the future, perhaps a little sneak peek about that book you're working on.
Sure. I mean, and I really, really appreciate always coming onto your show, and it's really wonderful to be invited yet again. And my forthcoming book is Crises Beyond Nationalities, which really, you know, talks about immigration and talks about different things happening in the world. But again, I mean, it didn't foresee like any of this. Nobody did. And
yeah,
so we're really looking at some of the other issues. And I think hopefully I have another article on this comparing it to the Spanish flu of 1918 coming out this weekend in Counterpunch. But most of my things can be found on academia.edu under JP Lindstroth. And again, like the takeaway for me, and I hope, and I know for you too, and I think for a lot of people, is that, wow, how to appreciate life and understand how delicate everything is, how one thing can just change the course of life as we know it on this planet, and one disease like this. And I think hopefully that the political leaders will have a takeaway from this and realize that, wow, maybe we need to be more prepared for this in the future. For certain they will. And I think that instead of hard politics is what somebody else has brought up, that they've called this soft politics, right? Biological warfare or biological disease. But it really isn't. And because it can affect everyone everywhere. And of course, one of my points in the last article was that the people in the developing world are affected even more so, because in some parts of the world, they can't social distance, right?
Yeah.
And so anyway, but they don't have the economic means to recover as fast or as much.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. But yes, it is reaching all socioeconomic levels of society and societies, in that Prince Charles now has the coronavirus case. So we need to all protect ourselves.
Right. Well, and so thank you, Ian, and hopefully some of your listeners will benefit from our conversations and have a different perspective on what's going on as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, JP Lindstroth. JP, looking forward to speaking to you next time you're on the program.
Thank you so much, Ian. It's great to be on your show.
If you're not familiar with JP Lindstroth, if this is your first time catching a Lindstroth report, and that we refer to his time on the program as, he's at academia.edu and catterpunch.org. A quick Google query of JP Lindstroth, Lindstroth, will yield a number of his articles and publications. Again, he is a former Fulbright scholar to Brazil, and he does hold a philosophical doctorate from Oxford. Actually, he is the second Oxford scholar, if you will, to join the program today. We started the show with Tobias Churton. This has been a quadruple header, a four-hour installment of Discussions of Truth. If you would like, which I highly encourage you to donate $1 a month, $5, you may do so at iantrottier.com. That's iantrottier. All of my guests today, three of the four have books you can buy, and you can donate to Makia Freeman's work as well. And certainly subscribe to this broadcast in podcast form. You may listen to it, re-listen to it on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, a number of outlets. I recommend Anchor.fm. I upload all episodes to Anchor.fm. And all episodes are found at iantrottier.com. So anyway, Wednesdays, 5 o'clock, Discussions of Truth. That's Eastern Standard. I'm right here delivering you a Discussion of Truth. The platforms that the program streams 24/7 on and is located at the 5 o'clock hour on Wednesdays, discussionsoftruth.com, freedomreserve.com, iantrottier.com, and stopmassmedia.com. Finally, at Wynwood One, not affiliated to Westwood One, WynwoodOne.com, Miami Radio. So those five platforms, buy a t-shirt, stopmassmedia.com. I am your source, your host, weekly, for Discussions of Truth. And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, with Zach Voorhees, former Google software engineer and whistleblower, do one thing, apart from being safe, and keep your social distancing, but if you do nothing else, be awesome.